Hi, and welcome to this month's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer Podcast, Nursing Edition. Once a month, sister publications Cure Magazine and Oncology Nursing News will come together for a podcast on topics that affect both cancer survivors and oncology nurses. For this episode, we'll hear from Caitlin Cohen, the winner of Cure's 2019 Extraordinary Healer Award. Cohen, a nurse practitioner at the University of Chicago Medicine Comer Children's Hospital, was recently honored at a gala that was held in conjunction with the 2019 Oncology Nursing Society Annual Congress. In this interview, you'll see that her dedication to her patients is nothing short of inspiring.
If you can just describe your feelings about being honored here tonight.
I'm incredibly grateful to be honored here tonight. It's nothing that I ever expected. It was so kind of Dr. LaBelle. I mean, truly, I do what I do every day because I love it. I love the patients. I love how they change me, how they make me better at my job every single day. And it's just an incredible honor that I was not expecting at all. I was completely caught off guard when I got the phone call because it's nothing that I do looking to be recognized. I just really love the patient population that I work with.
So Dr. LaBelle is the person who nominated you, and how do you feel about the fact that he nominated you in particular?
Yeah, so Dr. LaBelle and I started at the University of Chicago just a few months apart, and so I started my career as a nurse practitioner with him, and he's been an incredible mentor. He's a role model. He's what I think every physician should aspire to be, and so the fact that he would take time out of everything that he does for our patients in the lab to move research forward and everything was just incredible. I couldn't believe that he actually took the time to do that and that he felt so appreciative of me. I really think he's an incredible human being and physician, and our patients are lucky to have him.
Okay. Do you have any advice to oncology nurses who are just starting out?
It's very easy to get caught up in our role as a job. And I think it's really important to remember why we're there, what we're learning every single day. That some days you won't feel like you made a difference, but when people look back, you always did. And what I always tell my patients is that someday I really hope that we find a cure so that we don't have jobs anymore. That's the ultimate goal. But for now, we're just trying to get better every single day. And even when you've been doing this for a long time, there's always something to learn and more that you can push yourself to learn, journal articles that you can seek out. I find that when I start to get lazy and not try every single day, that I'm not giving the highest level of patient care. So I work to push myself and learn more and never stop learning.
Any developments on the horizon in oncology or oncology nursing that you're especially excited about?
Yeah, so in the pediatric world, we've had the first new drugs approved over the last few years in more than a decade, which is great. And we're starting to see survivorship increase in specific diseases such as neuroblastoma. We're also implementing new CAR T-cell therapy, which immunotherapy is really the way of the future, and it's moving us forward. And I'm just excited to see that we're finally moving forward in pediatric oncology, because for many years we had the same drugs and our survivals weren't continuing to improve because it is such a small population. And so I'm just so excited to see that happening. I'm also excited to see nurses getting more certifications and learning more every single day, because I think that the nurses are now providing the highest level of care that they can, and they're being empowered to empower the patients.
So how did you get into oncology nursing in the first place, and in particular pediatric oncology, and what do you find rewarding about it?
Yeah, so my college roommate's mother was an oncology nurse, and she invited me to come shadow her one time at the hospital and at her job, and I shadowed her for a day, and I have never looked back. I always knew that this is what I wanted to do, because the kids just have such a breath of fresh air. They are always positive. They are always moving forward. They're playing while bags of chemotherapy are hanging, and it just inspired me to take a step back and love life, and I think that is why I'm a pediatric oncology nurse.
So you were on the pediatric stem cell transplant unit. What kinds of cases do you treat there? I guess Dr. LaBelle described them as the most ill and the most complex at the hospitals. You know, what kinds of cases do you treat, and what is that like emotionally?
So patients who go to stem cell transplant are usually patients with genetic diseases that they were born with who will go immediately to transplant, patients with bone marrow failure syndromes that develop due to a virus or due to a genetic predisposition, or patients with relapsed leukemia and relapsed cancers. And so when they go through transplant, they get very high doses of chemotherapy, and they may either receive their own cells or someone else's cells. And after that, they can have, if they're receiving someone else's cells, it's called allogeneic, and they can develop something called graft versus host disease, which can be another chronic lifelong condition. Both kinds of patients after transplant have no immune function for at least 100 days post-transplant, so they're at the highest risk of infection of any oncology patients. We have to monitor them very, very closely, and that's for graft versus host disease, for infection, and that is, they do become some of the sickest patients on the unit, and so they require a very high level of care. We see them at least 3 times a week for the first couple weeks that they're out, and then twice a week for at least 100 days. I feel incredibly lucky that I work with the team that I work with, because we not only push each other medically, but we also support each other emotionally as we care for the patients. Everyone is so respectful of each other's opinions, and we all work so closely with the patients that we developed very close relationships, and they're able to tell us any concerns that they may have as they're proceeding through their treatment. So I think that the reason that we are so successful in what we do is because of the team that we work with and the patient population that feels so comfortable and confident in their medical team.
A few examples were given by your nominator about some things that you've done for patients that he would consider going above and beyond the call of duty. So one young man who had graft versus host disease, he was malnourished, so his mother was having trouble affording food for him and the family, and so you were buying some high calorie protein and vitamin drinks and giving that to his mom for him. But you let their mom think that the hospital was providing them. So can you talk about that? Like, what, you know, why you decided to do that and how it helped them?
Yeah, so after you have graft versus host disease, or while you're actively receiving treatment, you have a very hard time absorbing different kinds of vitamins, and a lot of patients will have a very low appetite just due to their chronic condition. And on top of that, their body's fighting the graft versus host disease, so they're utilizing a large amount of calories daily, and so they need a higher level of calories than anyone else walking around. And so he was a young boy, and he loved Ensure. That was really the only thing he would eat. However, many of the nutrition programs will not provide you with that unless you're unable to eat. And so they don't always provide that medication through insurance if you're able to chew food and swallow it, even if it's the only thing that you will take. And so we wanted to be able to provide him with that, because nutrition is the way you heal, and it's such an important part to improving his outcomes in graft versus host disease. So he was able to take multiple cans of Ensure a day. He's actually, over the last year, not required any further treatment for his graft versus host disease. He's doing great. He's back in school for the first time. He's eating a full diet. He wakes up all night and eats snacks. So he's doing fantastically well.
Great. So but you took it upon yourself to give him these because you knew that it's the only thing he would eat.
Yeah, and I just knew it was the most important thing at that time. We can do everything. We can give medications. We can tell patients to do PT and OT. He has the most incredible mother I've ever met, who would have done anything in the world that we asked. But there's not always enough financial support for patients, especially patients that had other disorders than cancer. There's not as many foundations for them, and so there was just no other way to help them. And we felt nutrition was just so imperative, and we really wanted to see him be successful.
So another example that he gave was a young woman who had depression and anxiety and a recurrence of AML. And so she was paging you about minor ailments, but really just needed someone to talk to. And evidently you gave up a lot of time to talk to her over maybe a 6-month period. So why were you willing to take time away from your other responsibilities to spend this time, giving her this support?
Each patient has different support at home or comes from a different environment. And I think, as we all know in oncology nursing, that the young adult population is kind of falls into this hole where there's not as many supports, but they're still looking to gain their own independence. So they're in charge of their medical care, but they still need a lot more feedback in their parents around and their parents to advocate for them. And she just needed to talk through a lot of things. Often she would call with a minor ailment, like a cough, and then we would just talk for a little while about everything that she was feeling and everything that had been going on in her life. And it was just important for her to have someone to discuss it with and someone that she trusted. And through our time and our speaking, I recognized how much patients do need support groups and those kinds of things, which after transplant, they're in such isolation they can't attend support groups because they can't be around other groups of people, which is really an area we need to work to improve in the stem cell transplant world, is how to make better support groups. But she's an incredibly young woman, and I want my patients to feel that we're there not only for their medical care, but also that we care about them as an entire individual. We care about that, supporting them emotionally through this, supporting them financially, and identifying any resources if they're available. And I think at the end of the day, that's how you build a trusting relationship with them, and that is how they come to have confidence in you and trust you as you move forward through treatment.
So the third example is that you were there. You really were kind of almost part of the family for a family where the patient was very ill, his younger brother died, then he died, and then eventually the mother died. So, and you were there for the remaining family members, you know, when the mother was sick and in the hospital, even sort of outside your institution, you were kind of at the bedside and helping. So can you just talk about why you felt it was important to follow through in this way?
Yeah, I think that when you become a part of the treatment team for a patient or a young child or an older child with oncology diseases, you become a part of their family. Probably a part of their family they never wanted to be a part of, but you're still a part of their family. They come to support you, they expect you, or they expect your guidance, and they appreciate your guidance on things. And you're often the first person to look to because you've told them to call you with anything throughout their treatment. I always tell my patients that there's nothing too small to call for. If you stub your toe, I want to know about it. Even if I'm not going to do anything because it's a minor ailment, I want to hear about it. And so then they come to look at you as their guide, especially in the medical system. And so for that family, I had become such a part of their lives over the last 2 years that they just wanted my guidance and mine and Dr. LaBelle's support. We were unable to guide them because the diagnosis was not one of our expertise, but we were able to be there and support them at the bedside and help translate medical jargon for them and help them understand what was going on and just allow them to feel their presence and allow them to feel comfortable because they were in a new hospital that they'd never been in. And they were also in an emotional place at the same campus as where they had lost their other son and grandchild. So I think that we were just there to provide them with emotional support and let them know that they were there, that we still always thought about them. We never stopped thinking about the patients that we've cared for. And we are always there if they need to reach out for anything, and we will do everything in our power when we can to help.
That's beautiful. You mentioned at the beginning of the interview that your patients, that you learned from them, as well as I'm learning from you. What are some of the things that you've learned from them, or you know, how have they changed you?
I have learned that no two patients are ever the same, and that ultimately we can have years and years of experience. I first started working on an oncology unit in 2006, so I've been doing this for about 13 years, and I've learned that every day a patient is different, and their complaints may be a little bit different. They may have the less than 5% adverse events that are labeled on the medication, and it's always important to take a step back and most importantly trust patients and their families if they have a new complaint. They also teach me about selflessness. Before I had children, you don't think about how much you're asking of families and how inconvenient cancer is. You're asking them to drop everything and come to the hospital anytime they have a fever. You're asking them to be in the clinic 3 times a week, and you're aren't always thoughtful about how difficult that is on their life. And so I feel like as I grow as a practitioner and also as a mother, I start to recognize how much we're asking them to do. And although we can't make this time easier, we can provide any support that we can, and maybe just acknowledge that we can't imagine how difficult this is, but if there's anything that we can do to make it easier, we do want to know about it. And I also learned from the kids that you can love life, and you should love every moment, and you should feel so fortunate to be be living this life.
Tune in next month for the next nursing edition of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Check us out at onknursingnews.com and never miss a beat in the field of oncology nursing.